Don Rucker. I think one of the challenges with this and sort of all of the in-steel stuff above the neck and above, as opposed to the knee and ankle and maybe heart, it's sort of in the definition. So, for example, a Glasgow coma scale of 14 is something where the person is essentially messed up and can't hold a job again. I understand it could go away tomorrow or later in the day or when they're sober, but, if you came to me with a Glasgow coma scale of 14, there's some potential serious life-altering deficit there that I think in this particular thing, again, this could be in the comment thing, needs to be. And then when you get
if someone had a life-altering injury like that, you would hope to have seen one of these other elements there, and that's what those other studies addressed and bore out.
There are so many reasons that someone might be 14 and they'd not be an NFL football player.
I understand you can find counterexamples, but I'm just saying that when you have somebody who has a neurodeficit for whatever reason, I think something, and certainly in the emergency department setting, that is something you have to give some significant benefit of doubt to. I think the other issue is severe headache. When I lost consciousness and post-traumatic disease and severe headache, I mean, my problem is many of these people come in with severe headache. The number of worst headaches in their life, I mean, we all do.
That's a different measure.
What
about the guy who comes in who hit his head on walking down the street, hit it on his thigh, didn't have loss of consciousness, and GCS is over, is normal? Those are the ones you're trying to get rid of, right? All the BS on the top, right? So that's the value.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, if you have, severe headache, this is a very judgmental. It's a very judgmental standard.
But Don, we're not worrying about those. We're not even into the gray zone.
Yeah.
We're into stuff that this shouldn't even see inside of the Department of Radiology. You guys never see those, right? Every day.
No.
And actually, I would say that this is
stock market stuff, right? Yeah.
Contrary to the one that'll be about the headaches tomorrow, this one at least has evidence for that, and it's got really good studies.
Yeah.
Better than others. It's hard to measure, which is the hard part of this. But I would say that out of our options, this is one very obvious place there's overdue, and that there's good evidence that there's overdue.
A few other comments, maybe?
I have a question which more reflects my ignorance, but how reliable do we think the Glasgow score is in the medical record to be extracted, or is it going to be in there in some other form that, so if we have a cutoff for a metric, then we should be able to pull out a score and make sure that it's there.
There are institutions that's reliably documented than anybody who's below 15, it's pretty reliable. No, I don't know what the community practice is like.
If it's not there now, it would be when you went to get the measure, or else you probably failed the measure.
It should be. I mean, it's not like,
I think, I'm not sure about that, because I think a lot of times what's in the chart is the actual lesion, depending on how severe the thing is. You have an XYZ on the scan or you don't. I mean, if you look at people who are, hand scanned in these traumas now, right, all that, I mean, there's sort of a crowd that's getting, the major trauma. This is obviously getting at the walkie-talkie crowd. I'm not sure these people have Glasgow coma scores.
Look at the nurse's notes.
They do. I mean, as far as the primary trauma survey, when a patient comes to the resuscitation area, and granted, if they're walkie-talkie, maybe a 14 or 15, but that's part of what's documented for every patient who comes through the trauma setting.
Right, but a lot of these patients are coming through trauma setting.
Any other, Michael, you had a comment?
Yeah, the only thing,
you know, we're in the radiology benefit management area, and we do outpatient pre-auth. And every insurance plan comes to us and says, well, what are you going to do about the ED? I mean, that, what can you do about the ED? And you know, we've looked at it a lot, and from a straight pre-auth perspective, there's not a ton that you can do. I completely agree that you'll generate Hawthorne effect here by saying that you're going to look at it.
That's what
we want. And I agree with that completely as well. I think that the really tough piece is, if I compare it to the breast stuff that we just talked about, where you have, you know, kind of this mandatory BI-RAD and the data is easily extractable, you know, CMS's stuff is easily extractable out of the claims and everything. I think, well, I completely agree with the measure, and I have no issues or basis to have issues with the scientific judgment of them. The data collection is just so tough for me on this one. I mean, if you're running a Medi-Calis or a Precipio or whatever, you can get it. I think as a national body, you know, that becomes very tough. To me, it's like an unfunded mandate. You know, we want to be taken seriously in the provider community and accepted, and to say, oh, we want you to do this, and by the way, all the ED physicians got to work with a piece of paper now, and you got to fill this thing out, and you're going to send it in, and we're somehow going to, you know, get the stuff in Excel and pull it together, becomes, you know, very expensive. All that said, I would love to see progress made on the measure in some method, because it's what you're getting at. I mean, we've all made jokes about, you know, the ED or, I mean, the running one in our shop is that the door to the ED is not a set of bifolds, it's a tube. So, you know, I'm hugely in favor of doing something down the road.
It's about being selfish. I'm very pleased we're not talking about mammograms. my issue at this stage is that the glasgow scale among neurologists is really a poor associated with mild, moderate, severe, maybe more mild head trauma. A couple issues I have is, A, in the previous discussion, we've looked at ED, but then a comment was made that we may look at outpatient facilities. Let's be fair. Nobody does CT in outpatient facilities for mild head trauma. So the science has gone in a different direction. We're looking at ERs or EDs that have 24/7 MRI right now. I'm very interested, and I agree there's overutilization of imaging in EDs and outside. Real question in my mind is, if we put these rules for CT, wouldn't you think with mild head trauma that the frequency of MRI may increase in emergency room with 24/7 coverage? And the other issue may be, if it has in outpatient. And if this discussion here is going to not only represent for ED, but will be at freestanding centers, hospital imaging centers off campus, then I'll promise you that in our practice, we actually have the largest neuroscience center in the country. We see 130,000 patients a year. And our CT numbers are decreasing with MR increasing. And we have both modalities within the facility. So the reality is MRI, in tomorrow's discussion for headache and mild head trauma, I mean, that has to be on the table also, the evaluation and utilization of MRI and CT.
I think you bring up a valid point, but I don't think it's our concern in the immediate future. I can get a head CT in 18 seconds. I can get a head MRI in 45 minutes after I go through 27 different hoops. So that's not going to happen very soon. It may happen.
We have trauma protocols less than 15 minutes as fast as you do.
Okay, 15 minutes, 15 seconds.
I do.
You know?
Mild head trauma.
Jacqueline Bello, I think the other issue is the monitoring through the study and the other CT scans in a multi-trauma setting that same patient is getting. And so we're here to discuss efficiency. Way before you start sending the patient to four different zip codes, they're going to CT anyway for the chest to get a CT of the head. And so I really think that we are stuck, like it or not, with the CT. I also really think that we bear the burden of having some sense of responsibility when it comes to the repeated radiation dose. I mean, you know, yes, this starts at 16, so we're not going to save the 10-year-old. But I take an ER shift every month. And there are people coming from nursing homes once a month because they've fallen at the nursing home. Instant CT of the head and CSF. And these are patients who, I mean, they're unchanged over 12 months. And hello, Medicare, you know, I mean, they're not going to die of the radiation dose, but they are going to kill our medical system.
Right, but they get a scan with this. They're over 60.
Right. Troy, Fester, I had a technical question. In the numerator, it says mild traumatic brain injury. In the denominator, non-penetrating head injury. Are those equivalent terms, or synonymous terms? Because to me, that's a technical problem, maybe a minor one, but using two different terms, we're arguing about definitions.
No, it's an additional requirement that once it's penetrating, it doesn't matter.
The denominator
right.
should be.
But the language should be the same between the numerator and the denominator and not different between the two.
Right.
I think I feel totally ignorant in terms of this discussion of feasibility with respect to a couple of things. Maybe some of the people in the room can clarify this, which is, one, the actual current level of penetration of electronic medical records into emergency rooms, which at least in our area of the country is clearly lower than the rest of the medical system. Two, whether insurers have already tried to do something about this with respect to indications, and that might include CMS, because at least as I've asked questions over the years regarding chest pain, some of the things that are done in the outpatient sphere seem to be handled so differently administratively within emergency care that it's like a mystery to me. So maybe some other people in the room could shed light on that.
Clarify, what you're asking for the EHR is how many could do this measure?
Yeah, or how many even have an EHR currently?
And a CPOE system that has indication.
Yeah, in an emergency room.
Less than 15%.
But even that system is not going to capture
the data. I think it'll be like 25%.
But it's pretty in that range now.
CPOE is less than 15%. EHR is about 20%.
Yeah.
Okay. That helps?
Yeah, that helps. But how about this issue of handling it from an insurer standpoint and indications? Because certainly CMS tries to regulate indications for procedures in the outpatient sphere and denies payment.
Yes.
Is this something that insurers have tried to do already, and if so, what happens?
I can tell you our experience in the Northeast is that for the most part they don't get into ED imaging. It's outpatient imaging.
And especially, this is Judy from Medicaid, there's no way to know with administrative data. There's certainly no way to know at point of contact. The best we could do, I think, is similar to one of the CMS measures that is proposed, is sort of find out what the rate of things are and maybe in that way encourage people to change their rate if they're an outlier. But that's a super blunt tool. This is much more specific and evidence-based, but there would be no way that we could collect that data. And if we asked our managed care providers to give us that data, what percent they would run screaming and yelling at us and say no. And, you know, honestly, we pay crappy, and we're certainly not paying for this additional thing that they would view as worth. Even though this is a huge problem of overuse.
Yeah, Carl.
I just wanted to back up a little bit. Creating a metric. What's a good and bad metric? One is ideal. So what's acceptable? I'm sorry. We're creating a metric, which to me means it's a measure of something that's going to tell whether you're using it or not. So what's an abuse? And attached to that, what's the false negative later? True positive rate of student incidence without these criteria. And also related to something that neuroradiologists say before, are we thinking of malpractice issues in this at all, or is that excluded?
So I
didn't
either.
Guidelines are practice guidelines.
And malpractice is always a concern. The tort issue is less of an issue here than it is for some of the other measures that will come before us while we're here.
But I'm not sure that I would agree with that. We have a paper on this topic exactly, looking at mild traumatic brain injury in the Medicare population over time, and imaging is basically approaching 100% across the board.
No, I'm not saying it's not an issue, but what I'm saying is here you're trying to give guidance to decrease overuse, mm-hmm. as opposed to just saying decrease overuse with no guidance. So I think that is the difference. I think the whole issue of tort concerns is something that this committee should think long and hard about. Because why do we overuse? Because we don't want to make a mistake, or because we're lazy. There are a couple of reasons for that.
Any other reasons?
Several. But we don't want to make a mistake in terms of our patients. So if we're going to be put in a position where our chance of making a mistake goes up, then we do need to worry about the tort issues. And every practicing clinician is worried.
So what is a good and bad metric?
I can't tell you what a good would be. Good would be probably close to, above 90%, 95%. Who knows?
This is Rebecca Stefano. I can't remember from the papers, but they quote the numbers. What would the impact of this be on utilization? So in the setting of mild brain trauma, how much would this decrease in the
I can't speak at 37%.
So you'd reduce, of a pretty common indication, imaging by 40%. Potentially,
that's what my point about it is that when
big.
You talk about demand side change in practice,
this is big.
This case is huge.
So in the interest of our developer, are there questions? We have our developer on the line.
Dr. Shore, are you on the line?
Yes, Jay Shore calling from Boston. I'm joined in the room by Ali Raja, who's an emergency physician and works on evidence-based imaging.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Were there any things that you wanted to specifically address to us relative to the comments you've heard? And then afterwards, we'll have a short Q&A for you from anybody in the panel that might have other questions.
Sure. I think I'll take just 1 minute and give you a brief background on the measure development process, and that should sort of apply to all four measures, and then we can both try to address a couple of the questions. These four measures were developed primarily by four emergency physicians with none of whom have any financial interest in the Percipio system or any other decision support system, and have been vetted through providers in multiple fields at the Brigham and other partners' hospitals. We are practicing emergency physicians, and know that the evidence shows that there is widespread variation in the use of CT, that there's evidence that CT radiation exposure is high, driving high Medicare costs, and that use has gone up in the last 10 years. So we looked for clinical indications where there were consensus evidence-based guidelines primarily applicable to the emergency department, and then we developed measures for those indications, and that's why we looked at these four areas. All of the measures were set up with the same general construct, which is that the denominator would be the population getting a CT, and the numerator would be the patients who had received a CT who had an appropriate indication. An alternate approach might be to define the population that had a traumatic brain injury, but as published literature has shown, ICD-9 codes and other administrative data are not reliable to define these populations. And so we set up the measures in that structure. We've also submitted them to be reported at the emergency department or facility level, not at the individual level, because as we all know, guidelines are developed for populations, and we didn't want to put pressure on any individual clinician. We didn't think the evidence was strong enough to not order that one individual test. We did think it would be very useful to know if one emergency department, 80% of their scans were consistent with evidence-based census guidelines, and another ED, 20% of their scans were in that form. Let me just turn it over to Dr. Raja for a second, who works with the Center for Evidence-Based Imaging, and he can describe the work that they've done and some of the published research.
I know that at least two or three of you are very familiar with our system here at the Brigham, since you've either worked here in the past or you're with one of our partner institutions. so I won't belabor the points here. I've heard your discussions, and I think they're right on. It's very easy to do this kind of data gathering with our Percipio and Medicalis systems that we have here. But what we've been doing is we've been actually looking at how many of our CT scans have evidence-based indications for them. And one of the most amazing things we've found is that there's such broad variation. Even among traumatic head CTs, we've found variation everywhere from 5 to 17% of patients specifically by emergency physicians. So there's some sort of a need for some sort of a better practice to see if we can diminish this variation. And I know you guys all agree with that in general concept. Now, as far as making this happen in feasibility, who are envisioning for emergency departments that weren't able to, for the vast majority of emergency departments who aren't currently able to do this on a computerized fashion, a simple paper form. Dr. Short and I just emailed a paper form to you guys as well, but you can, I'm sure, envision with, for example, a head CT for trauma, a simple paper form with the indications that we've outlined here, requiring only a checkbox if they applied to that patient, which would then meet the criteria for the imaging efficiency guideline. It wouldn't take that much more work for the emergency physician, and it would allow for pretty good review of those scans that did actually meet these guidelines. That's where we were actually going with this, but we'd love to hear whatever other questions you guys have for us.
And just to address a couple of specific questions, I think there was a discussion around GCS and some other questions on, I think the discussion was around traumatic brain injury measure, and the traumatic brain injury measure is based on a consensus guideline that was developed by the American College of Emergency Physicians and included representation from multiple specialties and included both the evidence behind the Canadian head CT rules and what are called the New Orleans head CT rules. One could have a long discussion about which of those is preferable, and there actually have been head-to-head comparison studies, but in order to be inclusive, our measure would allow any indication from either of those two measures. And so this is really the broadest inclusion of accepted consensus evidence-based standards that have been promulgated by the specialty society, the largest specialty society for emergency medicine.
Perfect. So questions at all for the measure developers? Yes.
One.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, go.
What was the gold standard for these ACEP findings? What did they find to say, wow, okay, it's worthwhile to do this? And did they find hemorrhage trauma? And how often did they find it to say this was a valid indication?
Let me make sure I understood the question. What was the gold standard in these clinical studies for comparing to the CT?
In other words, yeah, what did they find?
So both of these studies were used follow-up with either direct contact by telephone or review of medical record. One was published in JAMA, the other one in the New England Journal, Lancet in the New England Journal, and they've been, the Canadian study has been replicated with over 95% follow-up. They're considered, the gold standard of diagnostic test studies. And so the difference between the two measures, the New Orleans criteria, which were developed at Charity Hospital, used any CT significant findings on radiology, whereas the Canadian gold standard outcome was any finding that would require neurosurgical intervention. And since there are things you will find on a CT, say a small subarachnoid hemorrhage, which do not end up requiring neurosurgical intervention, by definition, the Canadian rules will use less will require less scans. They have studied them head-to-head, and in the head-to-head study, actually the Canadian rule was as sensitive and more specific, but a lot of doctors in the United States use the New Orleans criteria because of their concern about medical legal liability associated with missing a radiographically visible hemorrhage, such as a small subarachnoid, even if it doesn't require any specific treatment.
Great. One other question, Tim?
Yes, this is Jacqueline Bello. One of the points that came up in discussion earlier was, wouldn't it be great to be able to sneak in there and see what's going on now in terms of this being, these criteria being met, and therefore you have something to compare the measure to. Did you do any preliminary snooping around before you instituted this that you could answer that question for us?
So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Raja, and he can address what our data shows, because there is data on what the current variation is, and they're now implementing these decision rules.
Right, and so right now we're actually implementing these rules, and the studies are obviously ongoing. What we've found is that at this point, and again, we only have a few months' worth of data with this rule, but at this point we're looking at somewhere between a 60 to 80% compliance with one of these rules. Now, obviously, as you know, as you guys have already discussed, there's the Hawthorne effect, where now that we're asking people to click on a box, they may be clicking on a box they wouldn't necessarily have clicked on otherwise. But there seems to be somewhere between a 60-80% compliance with these rules.
But multiple published studies that are referenced in our application and also in the Canadian head CT rules literature show that in chart reviews of current practice, there is a large gap between the number of scans that are around the country, the number of scans that are done without evidence-based indication.
Great. John?
Yes, Don Rector, three definitional questions. One, what is your operational question of loss of consciousness? Because patients are often goofy on that. The second is, how do you distinguish severe headache from non-severe headache? Because at least in my experience, patients sort of tend to say their headache is severe. And the third one, on the numerator and on the denominator, I was wondering why choose the Glasgow Coma score of under 14 as opposed to under 15.
13. So none of these are our standards. We are basing this on a consensus, a published evidence-based guideline that is based on multiple well-done follow-up studies through the Canadian and the New Orleans criteria, and those studies use clinicians' decision about loss of consciousness and clinicians' decision about severe headache. And although I agree that one could say that those are subjective, when actually studied with tens of thousands of patients, they have been shown to be highly sensitive.
I had one question. This is Rebecca Smith-Byman. The way you described just minutes ago the way this would be applied, you talked about all CTs, how many fit within some appropriateness criteria. I want to understand, is this measure limited to a patient population defined at the point of referral from the emergency department as having mild traumatic brain injury, or is it meant to be applied from a point of view of all CTs that are done and how many fall within an appropriateness criteria? So one of those you could use decision support software order entry from the radiology point of view to get at. The other you'd have to do from the ED point of view.
It's my understanding that all CT scans get reimbursed require a physician's order. And so that was the other reason that we constructed the measure to occur for all CTs. So it's based on, if you look at the documentation, the denominator statement is the number of adult patients undergoing head CT for trauma who present within 24 hours of a non-penetrating head injury with a Glasgow Coma score greater than or equal to 14. There are then five denominator inclusion criteria that, and there are a set of exclusions that define who would not be included in the measure.
So my question is, the data form that you provided to us or that we just got by email is creating a cohort and denominator from the point of view of the emergency room and creating that cohort based on mild traumatic brain injury. The way you've described the measure right now is defined from the radiology database point of view, where I'm not sure if that information on trauma, mild traumatic injury, would necessarily be included in those data. So you might understand vomiting or severe headache, but you wouldn't know if that was a patient who was post-stroke or post-trauma. So, Justin, how to apply, you're describing this from the CT point of view, the data that we just sent is from the ED view. How is the cohort defined
and how do you define it? I can easily imagine applying it from the radiology point of view, but we couldn't get the cohort on trauma defined.
Well, I think there are two questions. One is, how do you define the cohort, which I think is very explicitly defined in the measure. The second is, how do you collect the data? What system a hospital would have and would want to implement. If a hospital has an EMR with physician order entry, this could be programmed into the radiology ordering platform. If they did not have that or they did not want to use that, they could make up a paper form that applied every time a head CT was ordered and had the exclusions and then the inclusions, and it would be a simple check process. The
great. I think that answers it. Other questions?
I have a question. Roswell Metch, I'm a neurologist. Your category of patients with mild head injury, no loss of consciousness, no post-traumatic amnesia, who have a severe headache and nausea, you just described a post-traumatic migraine. So are you saying that every post-traumatic migraine should have a CT? And these type of headaches are very common, especially if you have a previous migraine history. I think Donald alluded to that. And many of these patients with head injury have also whiplash injury, so many of them come with cervicogenic headaches. Are you presuming that a cervicogenic headache, or so-called acute or episodic tension type headache, or post-traumatic migraine, are these individuals, by your measures, your numerators, these individuals will be getting CAT scans? And are you concerned that the frequency of CAT scan, in fact, may increase in that subset of that population? And should you define headache somewhat more specifically than just saying severe headache?
So I think this is these are good questions. Again, the numerator details are not based on something that we sat around and made up. This comes from the evidence-based consensus guideline published by the American College of Emergency Physicians, and their evidence-based consensus guidelines were based on those two large studies. And all of those terms were what were used in those studies. It is possible that someone with a post-traumatic migraine would meet these criteria. The clinical question that is presented to the emergency physician is, does this patient in front of me who has a mild traumatic brain injury and a headache require scanning? And that's the question that the guidelines attempt to address. And so whether they may ultimately have a migraine, but as the clinical question people are addressing and what the clinical decision rules have been addressed for, it's very unlikely that these measures would increase imaging, because what they are going to do is they are going to measure patients who received an image and said whether or not it was appropriate. They are not setting up a population with a diagnosis and saying you didn't get an appropriate scan. So everyone who's in this population already got a scan. The only way you will look worse is by ordering scans on patients. Your institution would look worse is ordering scans on patients without indications.
Rich. This is Rich Griffey. Jay may have heard Howard say that I like this measure. I think it's a good measure, and that the Achilles heel of this measure may be the feasibility component in terms of reporting. And it's great to have a paper form, but a number of people have brought up that, well, then we've got to do something with those forms, or you have to have someone to enter that data and this sort of an unfunded mandate, a lot like the pneumonia measures, for example. That's all charts. Do you have any thought about how to get around that or how to make that simpler? I know we talked about sampling. If you did that, you'd want to make sure you had a denominator, so not just the good papers or the compliance studies were filled out. Do you have any thoughts about that?
So I'm going to defer to Dr. Raj on a technical aspect.
So Dr. Griffey, that's a great point. This is obviously an unfunded mandate. It would take a lot. It would take some time. It would take somebody to actually collect the data. It would take somebody to actually go through and measure it. I guess our biggest overarching point is simply that this is somewhere that we need to move towards, and I think this is a first step. If we can figure out a better way to do this that would take less man hours, or if we can more widely implement electronic physician order entry, that'd be great, and it would make this a lot easier. But if just to get things started, it takes a paper form, and that actually pushes people to spend money on electronic order entry systems rather than having to fund somebody to go through and collect forms, then that's great, because that's where we want to go. Unfortunately, you're absolutely right. We don't know how to get this funded, but I think we all agree that this is where we want to go.
The second point I would make is I don't think the term unfunded mandate is correct, because the facility and the reviewing physicians are both getting well compensated for each of these scans. And so the time and effort to properly document an indication doesn't seem onerous. The second comment is that, like the pneumonia measures and other core measures, I think sampling would be very appropriate for facilities that could not easily collect data on all of them. And there are CMS has well validated sampling numbers of what would be appropriate.
Helen?
Just a couple points. Helen. So I just want to point out that this measure would only go forward for time-limited endorsement. I just want to emphasize that again. NQF has endorsed numerous measures based on medical records. I don't want this to seem as if it's a real aberration. Oftentimes, new areas, the first thing that happens is a medical record-based measure. They get tested. There may be other people ways to follow it, but I just don't want it to seem like this is actually all that different than the majority of the core measures we require hospitals to do, which are all paper-based at the moment. So I guess the major question for Jay is, I just want to understand that if it is time-limited, do you have a plan and the capacity to test it within 12 months and report back to NQF?
Absolutely. We're actually doing that right now.
And just one last comment. This is, if there's anything we hear a cry for, particularly if the committee doesn't have as many consumers and purchasers on it, one is out sick and we have a limited number at the table in Medicaid, it is for overuse measures. So I think, this is where those four criteria are intended. They're not weighted. They're not do one versus another. You have to make an overall assessment of how you think those four play out. Feasibility is a concern, but you have to weigh it against the other.
Any final comments?
Is there a worry that the studies about the gaming in terms of the severe headache versus headache? Because I think it's a different crowd when the study researchers who are motivated and in these big studies to prove the point that we don't need the image is a sort of a very different dynamic than ER docs who are ordering these studies for some intrinsic reason, presumably since they're actually not paid to get radiology studies, contrary to what was mentioned, who might just say, well, it's a severe headache, because that's sort of what the patients typically say. In this, and I just, that sort of, I hate to harp on this, but that's, it's the
answer this
of this nebulous symptom that's the big clinical concern when you're seeing these people. It's that sort of subtle judgment, I think. Because people do get burned. I mean,
I would strongly recommend that if people have questions about this measure, that they review the original studies for the Canadian and or the New Orleans head CT rule. The way that those studies and well-designed diagnostic tests on decision rules are designed, the clinicians were not pressured to do anything. They just had an order form, and they implemented this in a number of emergency departments and basically said, do what you would normally do. And then after a period of time, they compared what was on order forms to patients' eventual outcomes, and using regression and sorting statistical techniques, they figure out which indications have the most association with the outcome.
Okay. I think in the interest of time, we're going to thank you very much for your effort of answering our questions and for putting forth this measure. Helen?
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. I think in the interest of time, we're beyond the hour. I assume we'll hold vote till tomorrow. You want to vote tonight?
But I think we need more discussion, don't we?
I'm all for voting, but if there are folks, I didn't want to shortchange, if they felt there was a need for more.
Before we vote, can the people who read it carefully sort of give us a summary of their view?
And I would just say, from my point of view, the only issue that is really a question, I'm not that concerned about people gaming the system any more than gaming anything else. And I think that goes on. And the fact that you might have 5% gaming in and still get rid of 25% of excessive imaging, I think is acceptable to me. So the only part of it that I think raises any real concern is the feasibility. And, you know, I'm speaking from an institution not dissimilar from the Brigham, but without the computerized physician order entry piece in place. And I think it'll be difficult to implement for even us. I think it becomes that much more difficult at other levels. I do agree that the state performance they're presenting is so simple that you could collect this data, and it is such a high dollar item that it should motivate practice change.
But if you look at that paper form, I can't imagine ordering a head CT for mild traumatic brain injury and not circling at least one of those indications. You're going to get 100%.
You know, I disagree.
No, you might get 100% of people that when they say, you say you can't imagine ordering it and not circling one of those. The question is, can you not order it? Because
right.
When you really look down that list,
yeah.
You're like, there's nothing really there for me to go with.
That's why it's time limited, and that's why you'll learn what you learn, I would think.
Yeah.
And part of the, prior authorization, you don't really, especially in Medicaid, if you fill out a prior authorization form, we pretty much approve it. But the part where you save is that barrier to get there. And I think that this is exactly that same thing. You'll probably approve everyone that fills out the form, but there will be some segments that you've avoided, and that's what you're looking for.
You're just bringing that thought to top of mind. That's all that form does. It just brings that score to top of mind before you order the CT.
But
that's all you can hope for.
So, Helen, just a point of clarification. Time-limited data that you would require, just clarify for the committee here what that really means.
Right, and then spell that as a form. Essentially what it means is you guys agree that the measure would pass all the other evidence evaluation criteria with the exception of the fact that it's not been tested, so they would need to go back and test whatever form the measure is going to be used in. This is the same thing for form. They need to look and see how reliably they can collect the individual data elements, whether the reliability assessment, probably in this instance, they're going to have an electronic system. Particularly interesting to understand, in fact, if the results are similar between the electronic system and the paper record. Essentially, at the end of the day, allowing us to say, can you validly and reliably collect this data? And given the feasibility concerns, I hope they'd also give us some information about how difficult it is to collect.
How many systems? I'm just curious about what would be considered a reasonable test population. Can it be one institution?
No, it cannot be one institution. There's actually specific guidance, but it depends on the kind of measure. It's probably at least 5 to 10 institutions or a certain number of patients. It really depends on the level of analysis of the measure. We'll need to take a look.
So they have to test it?
They have to test
the test this measure on 10 people? 10
institutions? I can't remember the exact protocol, but whatever the protocol is, they need to undertake efforts to test the measure, provide information back, reliability or validity, or the measure is endorsed. So that's the issue. Is that the fail state for measures like this? If you think it otherwise meets all the criteria, we just don't know how well it's going to perform in the real world on paper, since not everybody is like Brigham or other places like that.
Some are better.
Hey.
I don't want to get there because I worked at the BI. But, I had a question. What occurred to me that they're actually going
to
do a multi-site study on that. I don't know if that's a question to them. Or somebody else.
So they
know that's sort of part of what.
And it would need to be at sites that don't have computerized order entry,
that's
too, right?
Paper form, because that's what they're arguing is the paper is the dominant mode of collection.
Roger?
Yeah, it's multiple sites, but do they have to be outside of the same network, or could they be within the network?
They could be within the network. But, again,
those are details, but I just raised the question.
Do they have to have any discussion about what they produce and what it does, that number? Is there any discussion that it's useful in any way or just proving that it can be done?
At this point, you should be making the assessment that you think is already usable.
Okay, so
my
number is 8.8.
Why would it not
this
be
is
like gastric
proportion. This is a proportion of CTs for mild traumatic brain injury that meets some guidelines.
Yeah.
So you'd like it to be 50.
Okay.
97.
Can I just say quickly, I think there's, you know, Helen, you said that some measures rely on chart abstraction. I think there's a very big difference between going through the medical record to see whether or not these criteria are met versus forcing someone to fill out a form where the only things they can check off are the criteria, are the specifics that meet it.
Yeah.
And I think for this to be a useful measure, the paper form is not enough. You'd have to do the chart abstract. You'd have to do the review of the medical record, either manually or using the EMR, because in my opinion, this form is just not acceptable. No paper form.
Why? Because you think that it's going to be garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. You're asking some intern in the emergency department, while the patient's on the way to the head CT to fill this thing out, they're just going to check.
These are your choices of why you ordered
that
scan.
That may be the case. I mean, the proof is in the pudding with the utilization data.
But we're not going to be tracking utilization. We're only tracking the percentage of the head CTs that meet these criteria. And so I would argue that you either have to do it by looking at the medical record to show that it's been documented, as opposed to a paper form filled out, or EHR. I just think this is absolutely not acceptable.
To fill out this form, we call that lying.
Yeah. No, but his question is, how do you get the denominator? How do you get
that's
the denominator?
That's right, in that they have yet to produce evidence. They're getting it now, but they have yet to produce evidence to say, we implement this system and utilization of this test goes down.
But
and that's why I was trying to get at the denominator. How are they assessing?
No. They have it. Their preliminary data says that 30-some percent don't meet the criteria.
I mean, there's more studies in the literature.
Yeah.
Inappropriate.
No. There's not multiple studies that say that if we have a system that has to check this box, it will reduce the number of ordered tests. That doesn't exist.
It should.
There is 30% of SOA tests that don't meet this criteria under current systems.
But not computerized decision support tools outperform education or physician champion or CME or any other intervention you have. I mean, it's the best thing you have. Now, they won't all be computerized. It'll be a piece of paper. But it's,
just clarifying where we are. Okay.
I understand the point that's been made. I just point out that there is a fair of literature that just, as we pointed out, if you audit something, it'll get better.
One of the things that's going to come up again tomorrow about the NQF stuff is the feasibility stuff. And again, what I don't understand is we don't make people follow these things, and there are several things we're going to look at that are just exceptionally clear that are overused, and the scientific literature that there are exceptionally clear criteria for what these should be. Right, we're going to see lots of those type of things, and those are easy, and then we hit this feasibility thing, and we get stuck. And so, what's wrong with saying that these are just good and right things? And what happens? The accreditation ability, or the payers say, hey, and NQF says these are important. You start reporting them, or we're not going to credit your ER, or we're not going to pay for these. Then people have to do them, right? So what do we have to? What is our obligation to say that it is a really easy thing to do or not? I mean, that's what I'm struggling with. Because this is, no one argues. I don't think the argument is about this. These aren't exceptionally over-ordered, and that there are unbelievably good criteria for when they should be ordered. And this is like one of the best things of all the things we've done here that's supported with literature. But we're stuck on what a pain in the rear it is to do. But nobody has to do it, right? Federal thing that says that everybody must follow the NQF, so CMS does it, or WellPoint does it, or somebody says we got to do it.
NQF does not implement the measure.
Right, that's why I'm stuck on feasibility with a lot of our measures.
Shall we get to the vote?
Right.
Near and happy hour, guys.
So the feasibility killed the deal?
No.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out in a few minutes here. Any other? I think this people stated pretty clearly where they stand, risk, plus or minus. Okay, can we pull up the vote? We've got to get through these criteria. It'll be interesting. I know how the first scores will go, but I just don't know how this final one's going to go. That's all I know.
Why we vote?
Okay, should it be 19 voting, right? You lost Mary.
Oh, she gave me her proxy vote.
You didn't hear that? No, she gave it
before
to me.
She left.
You're wrong.
No, she gave it to me.
Okay.
She owes me.
Was
that Mary? Yeah.
Okay. Important.
Oh, your tax override.
Okay. How many think the importance rating here is high?
Okay,
I've got two laps.
Moderate was one.
Scientific acceptability. Okay, high. One, 15. Moderate. 1, 2, 3. That was
low.
And one low. Okay. Usability. How many say high? That'd be a zero. Moderate. Usability?
Yeah, we're on moderate.
Yeah, so we've gone through to. Yeah. Moderate. And low? One.
Two.
No. Two, sorry. Are you right? Okay, feasibility. High. Moderate. Wow. Okay, low. How do we all guess? Okay. And for all the ducklings, we have the yeses and noes, so let's do yeses.
I guess before we do that, we'd like to open up. Sorry.
Okay.
Anyone on the line for public comment?
Okay. So this is Mary. Give Kirk my vote.
Okay. Let's have vote on this is yeses. No's. 2, 3. Plus, then 15. 15 and 3. It was definitely 3 no's. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Sure. Anything you want to recommend?
As I mentioned, I think this would be, I would not like to see this presented for headache centers around the country. It would not make sense. Urgent care centers and even probably infusion labs that deal with headaches. So if this is ED, that's what I'm going to be using.
It's acute trauma.
This is time limited.
Yes. Correct.
Do you have any other comments?
I like the comments that we used to set up the paper system registry. What about setting up the
building?
I think all of them.
All of them?
Hospital, I think.
Yeah.
Real world.
Is everybody okay?
And the only other comment I'd like to make is that we actually have a study that would attract the degree that would actually decrease the time after implementation.
Great, thank you very much.
Test the rate overall.
Okay.
Is everybody okay? So for the morning, is everybody okay starting at 9?
Yeah.
Getting out earlier?
Yeah.
Working
yeah,
hard?
I got a 5 o'clock.
Okay, 9 is good. Nine is start.
I'm all about fire.
Thank you. Yeah, well,
I could have definitely done that.
I'm going to go to the next one.